Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jennifer Givens, and I'm here from the University of Virginia School of Law Innocence Project on behalf of Petitioner Gary Bush. Mr. Bush spent 9 years in prison for crimes he didn't commit. He was convicted in 2007 of a 2006 bank robbery in Prince George County and a 2006 bank robbery in Petersburg. He was released on geriatric parole in May of 2016, only because the actual perpetrator of this crime had a crisis of conscience and called the police and confessed to these robberies. To be sure, though, there were indications at the time of trial and before that the Commonwealth had the wrong man. A jury in Petersburg and a judge in Prince George's County convicted Mr. Bush of these robberies, despite his protestations of innocence.
Counsel, as we're talking about sort of the elements of the non-biological, because you're going through, I assume, in terms of getting there, you would agree that Watford would be something that's impactful as we look at the statute now in reference to the would versus could?
Yes.
Okay. And while the Commonwealth cannot necessarily admit elements of law, there is the acknowledgement from the Commonwealth that what's been alleged is material. Is that fair to say in terms of?
That is. The Commonwealth concedes that it is material.
So arguably those would be sort of the major boxes to check in terms of the materiality, correct? And then could you just speak to the would aspect in terms of Watford, if you don't mind?
You want me to skip directly to prejudice?
You can come back, but if you could just address that and then you can continue with your argument.
Sure. I think that we certainly have presented clear and convincing evidence that no juror would or could find Mr. Bush guilty of these crimes in light of the new evidence.
Absent convictions, could a first, under the old standard, I think the case law would say that a jury could say that just because somebody else has confessed doesn't carry your burden. Does that change with Wood? Somebody with the change in the statute to Wood and the decision in Watford, that somebody coming forward, whether they have been convicted of the crime or not, and said I did it, is that enough, or does it require the actual convictions that have since occurred for the person who came forward?
Your Honor, I do not think that it requires the actual conviction of the perpetrator. I think each case is individual, and the circumstances need to be assessed in their entirety in light of the evidence presented in each case. I certainly think in this case, there would be as the court knows, in this case, we have one of the robberies for which Mr. Amos has been convicted, and the one of the robberies he has not yet been convicted.
Do you know what the explanation is?
Your Honor, I don't have the explanation. We do know from the prosecutor in Petersburg that who prosecuted the 2014 Petersburg robbery, that she has every intention of prosecuting the 2006 Petersburg robbery. And all of the robberies, the prosecution, the charges, the prosecutions, and the guilty pleas are based on the same new evidence, and that is Mr. Amos' confession and then subsequent guilty plea. So we, to get back to Your Honor's question, we certainly believe that despite the fact that there hasn't been a conviction for the 2006 Petersburg robbery, that the confession, which is corroborated by the circumstances of the crime and the handwriting of the note that was given during the robberies, the timing of the robberies, the weather conditions of the robbery, everything that the prosecution relied on in moving forward and everything that the court relied on in accepting the guilty pleas, that all corroborates his initial confession and substantiates it.
All right. Under the Wood standard, you don't contend that simply somebody coming forward and saying that they're the actual criminal agent and this person had nothing to do with it, that doesn't automatically trigger relief. You need additional things, such as the things you've listed.
Your Honor, I certainly don't think that I can propose, that I would suggest there's a per se rule that any time somebody accepts responsibility, that without some sort of substantiation, corroboration, that it would necessarily mean they're entitled to relief. I think the circumstances of each case are unique. And again, so I think, we've jumped to the punchline here, but I think for the reasons that I've outlined here, the confession is true. There's absolutely, the judge, when they were, the prosecutor and the judge went to great pains, I think, to make sure that the plea was knowing and voluntary, that there was no mental health issues at play, that there was no motive to fabricate the confession. In fact, Mr. Amos didn't even realize somebody had been convicted of this crime when he did confess. So the suggestion that he is confessing to help or protect someone else is certainly unfounded. And as Your Honor notes, the Commonwealth concedes the confessions are material. I think even without the Commonwealth's concession, that would be clear in this case in light of all the evidence at issue. And, as it stands, there are currently two men convicted for one crime, the 2006 Prince George's County. There stand two men convicted for the same crime. And obviously that cannot stand.
Where the evidence was that the crime was committed by one person.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor, yes. And the same goes, there's evidence that the 2006 Petersburg robbery was also only convicted by one man. And so for those reasons, we submit that the court must issue a writ of actual innocence. And as the court is aware, the Commonwealth, I think, concedes this remedy is appropriate here. If the court has no other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very well, thank you. Mr. Dillingham.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr.
Dillingham.
Please, Court, Your Honor, Matthew Dolgan, Senior Assistant Attorney General for the Commonwealth in both these petitions. I think Watford is, as Judge Malvo said, impactful in the analysis in this case. In our answer, we had argued that it would be possible for a rational juror to convict two persons for a crime that all the evidence indicated was committed by only one person. And we do agree that the confessions are material in both senses, that they're relevant to the only issue at trial. In fact, in both of the trials leading to Mr. Bush's convictions, the prosecutor had argued that the issue before the trier of fact in each case was the identity of the robber. It was never a question whether crime was committed or the other elements. The confession, as has been pointed out, is corroborated in numerous ways, and there was a extensive inquiry reflected specifically in the Prince George transcript that's been made part of the record as to any improper reason or motive for the confession or the plea. And those were ruled out by the trial judge and the prosecutor's own investigation. But that's even if the ultimate issue is that no reasonable trier of fact could find him guilty. Under Watford's probabilistic analysis, you have to imagine a juror that's confronted with the evidence that was adduced in the original trials against Mr. Bush and the confession by Mr. Amos and weigh a defendant who put forward an imperfect alibi and an imperfect fingerprint analysis that the trier of fact in each case didn't find exonerating with a confession. We recognize that our position in the answer is our position. It's not binding on this court to find that in the ultimate requirement of the statute, whether a reasonable trier of fact would find guilty or not, is for this court to determine in the first instance in this case of original jurisdiction. But based on the evidence that's been attached with the petitions and the other evidence that's since come to light, we join in the prayer that the petition be granted in both of those cases.
Does the Commonwealth have any position, and it may not affect this case given the amount of corroboration, but how has the could, would change the just because somebody else comes forward? What's the rule of decision for the case where there's not been a subsequent conviction, where there hasn't been the guilty plea and all of the corroborating factors that the other courts have referenced here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where does, under could, it clearly left us nowhere. Under would, does it leave us anywhere, or is it just, how does one write this?
I think it leaves us in future cases having to be more fact-bound in some of our weighing of those statements. I think we can have a case where someone comes forward with a statement that says, no, I did it, which upon investigation is entitled to little or no weight, that's not corroborated, that's not found, and that probably is not even material, but certainly wouldn't fit in a probabilistic analysis that we're now required to make since March 1st, that a reasonable trier of fact would come to a different result given this unweighty confession. So I think the Watford elucidation of the standard will put us in closer cases than this one, having to make a much more fact-bound weighing of what a reasonable trier of fact would do, given whatever the alleged new information might be. If there are no other questions, I'll stand by our pleadings. Thank the court.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Gibbon?
Your Honor, I have nothing further unless the court has any questions.
I was wondering what you wanted to rebut out of that.
I just wanted to save time in case.
All right, very well. Thank you. We will step down and greet counsel. This brings our docket to a close for right now.